On this Missouri Review podcast, we begin our presentation of a particularly exciting category from our 2007 audio competition, the 10-Minute Plays. Today, we have the first-place winner, Chris Saknussemm, with his play, The Memory Wound. Chris also had a winning entry in the narrative essay category, which you can listen to on one of our earlier Audio Winner Series podcasts.
Genevieve in a starfish blue summer dress and a French girl's wide-brimmed straw hat. We were strolling hand in hand through Funland, a warm, slow purple dusk with the lights of the rides twinkling. Young soldiers in uniform hugging their narrow-waisted girlfriends, heaving baseballs at towers of iron milk bottles, or flinging darts at a wall of breast-like balloons. Swing music from the dance hall, the scent of hot pretzels. She pointed to the Ferris wheel that looked like it was made of sugar candy, and then the crowd began to change. The couples and the peppermint ice cream-based children wavered like silver gelatin ghosts. Their voices and laughter continued, but it seemed to come from a distance. Gradually, they began to fade, receding like sway handprints on stainless steel. She led me behind the skating rink to what appeared to be an old bathhouse, built out over the rocks where the seawall would later be. I heard the sad, faint harmony of the Andrews sisters singing, "I'll be with you in apple blossom time," dwindling away with the ping and clank of the rides. Then we were inside the dank-smelling baths. The only illumination came from candles and hurricane lanterns. There were long copper troughs of trickling water, and a maze of square stone pools with steps cut into the side. Around the edges and all across the slate floor, ancient, naked men lounged like reptiles, and real reptiles skittered, frill-necked things and iguanas, while rusted ladders descended into saltwater-smelling darkness and iron catwalks extended out of sight, their railings embellished with ultraviolet salamanders and irradiated geckos. From hidden chambers and platforms, and from the depths of the cement pits, there came sighs, as in an opium parlor. Genevieve's dress had evaporated. She was nude now except for black glass stiletto heels, and as she stepped between the withered reptile men, the more deformed the figures became. Skin scaled, limbs contracting, gills forming, misshapen heads of bass and sea turtles. Water flowed through bars in the wall into a series of pools. Chameleons dotted the stone floor. Faces hung like damp masks from hooks in the wall in the shape of hands. And in the center of the room was what looked like an operating table, positioned beneath a skylight. "Take off your clothes," she commanded, and I found myself doing as she directed. "Now lie down on the table on your back." I was seized with fear. The sheeted bench beside the operating tables laid out with glinting scalpels and surgical implements, and a single luxuriant peacock feather. "What are you going to do to me?" I demanded. "Trust me, it's part of the healing," she said cryptically. "It's the most intimate thing that's ever happened to you." I couldn't help myself. Intimacy with her was all I wanted. I lay down and looked up. The skylight was shaped like a human figure, radiant, like the reverse of a silhouette. An angel. I felt myself drawn up toward it, as if it were my own outline floating on the ceiling. My voice was lost in anxiousness as I saw her hands move across the bench of blades. What was she going to do? The terror and the yearning to know was more than I could take. Instead of one of the scalpels, she picked up the peacock feather. "Now lie very still," she whispered. "I don't want to hurt you. Yet." I couldn't keep my eyes open. I had to withdraw into my mind. Then I smelled her flesh draw near. I thought maybe she'd exchange the feather for one of the scalpels because I felt a ripping pain, deeper than anything I'd ever experienced, and yet somehow pleasurable. Beyond pleasure, like some ecstasy massage. But when I snuck a peek, I saw that the sensation was achieved with a peacock feather alone. Where for a second I thought she was going to castrate me, suddenly I craved the touch of the soft veins, the simulation of slicing, an incision more extreme for being imaginary. She teased me with a soft feather, and I felt every millimeter of skin tingle and wrinkle with the gorgeous agony. She whispered something I didn't understand. I thought she said, Now it's time to cut out the past. The feathers stroked the scar where Brianna had shot me, a livid wheal. The ridges of plume triggered a fire of nerve ache, and then release. I felt my body go into seizure. The tremor started deep inside the bullet hole and spreading in vibration after vibration up my spine, into the dead wings of my shoulder blades, and down my legs, burning my toes. The sheet beneath me was soaked, sweat pouring, and something else. A viscous substance like ectoplasm, and out came things I'd had inside, oozing in a mess of crystal scales. She opened up the old wound and removed a handful of plastic Apaches that I'd once buried in our backyard. And then Amelia Kriakin bomb pistol from the man from Uncle Show. She pulled out Pabst Blue Ribbon beer bottle caps that used to have little Rebus puzzles inside. Condoms, cigarette butts, and a half pint of Vat 69. And then she said, "Hold very still, this is going to really hurt." And it did. More than I could believe. It hurt so much I cried out like a baby slapped into breathing air, and then she held up a 25 caliber slug from a Beretta Bobcat 21. "That can't be," I moaned. "They pulled it out." "They didn't remove your anguish," she said as she took the slug in her mouth and swallowed it like a communion wafer. "I have. The memory wound is clean now." I was naked, soaked, and limp. She helped me to rise from the table, psychoplasm and sweat shining like a film of respiring algae. "Approach the water," she said, pointing to the pools. I stepped, between the chameleons and the lost time trinkets she'd extracted, into the water as she held my head under. Beneath the surface, I could hear the ticking of the antique French clock that had sat on the mantel in Erie Street. And I remembered back to days long ago in the valley, to times before my father died, when we were happy. Late August nights, a couple of my friends and me would scale the fence and dive in the public pool, the light beneath the springboard undulating like a submarine moon. We'd become shapeless, gliding and frogging in the pale green water, luminously cleated against the tiles. Tadpoles and torsos jackknifed, boarding air to tunnel toward the drain where potato bugs wrinkled, clawing up through thick bubbles back into the warm air that smelled of chlorine, and the trampled weeds in the field that bleed milk when you squeeze them. Night after night, we swam in each other's bodies, then waded single file out of the shallow end and lay on the cement, phosphorescent, panting, until the silhouette prints of our wet skin diminished to single drying points, satellite blinking overhead. Sirens sounded across town, but not for us, not yet. My friend's gone, the light extinguished. I'd float on my back in the black water, listening to my heart, my breath, the breathing of distant swimmers. Now held under the water by Genevieve, my skin had been stripped away like a costume I'd been wearing. My face, organs, bones, and all. I was just a bright reflection, like the shape of the skylight. Liquid light. Becoming bubbles. Becoming mist. Becoming.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from the Missouri Review. To find out more information about the Missouri Review and to see a complete list of the winners of our 2007 audio competition, please visit us at www.missourireview.com.